Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Jose Vieira from Disability Rights Promotion International. So tell me a little bit about your experience with Disability Rights Promotion.
My experience, I'm one of the five regional officers that the project has. DRPI, which is a global forum for promoting disability rights, has five regional centers around the world. One of those five centers is located in Argentina, in Buenos Aires, and I'm currently the regional officer for the project down in Latin America. My experience is that this project basically combines practical experience and theoretical approach around disability rights. So I think this is a unique project where through academic evidence-based approach, you can better understand the reality of disability rights around the world.
So, can you tell me a little bit about some of the observations made at your office about some of the needs of disability life?
Great. For sure, there are a lot of needs when we are talking about disability rights. I would like to focus my answer in the Latin American region, which is, I would say, the same as other regions around the world. People with disability daily face a lot of type of violations of their own rights. And basically the challenge here is how not only to stop those violations, but rather how to empower persons with disability in order to promote their own rights. I think the main goal here is not only to making those violations not longer happen, but rather how people with disability can lead their own promotion in terms of getting rights. And when we say getting rights, we talk about having access to houses, having access to education, having access to employment, having access to health, having access to transportation. But not only having the right to access to education, because the key point here is how that education is. And what I mean by how this education is, I'm talking about principles of human rights. Principles of human rights are principles or fundamental rights are like dignity, autonomy, respect for difference. So, for example, when talking about education, people with disability often have access to education, but what we have to ask ourselves is that education a quality education? Is that education a dignified education? Does the person with disability autonomously access to education or depends on others' decision? So I think that the key challenge here is not only having to talk about accessibility to rights, but rather started talking about what type of rights we want to promote. And when we talk about what type of rights we want to promote, we mean that people have to have the right to choose whether they want to attend to a local school nearby their houses or they want to go somewhere else. People have to have the right to choose where to have their medical appointment, not having to travel, 200 or 300 kilometers away from their homes to have a decent access to health. So I think the main goal here is how to we start to talk about rights rather than just services. Services are, I would say, sometimes are not too bad, but the quality of those services for persons with disability remains a challenge.
So in your time with the project, has there been any success that stood out for you?
Yeah. I think that among many, many success that the project has produced, I would say that for me, the most important thing is how to the participants of the project. Our project is mainly focused on training people with disability in their own rights. I would say that the most important thing for me is how you see the participants coming into the training the first day with a lot of questions and with not many knowledge about their own rights, and how those same participants come out from the training totally empowered with more tools for promoting their rights. I think that's the most important success of the project.
So if you could send any message about why it's important for a person with a disability to know their rights, what would you say?
Because we improve our life quality. By promoting our own rights, people with disability, like me, we start to know better what we can do and we start to be more included. Otherwise, we are just passive recipients of what other people like to give us. But when we start to promote our own rights, we change into an active role where we start to say and to choose what we want to do in our life.
How does the community respond when a person with a disability gains this assertion, when they start to act on their own rights?
Sorry, could you repeat the question?
How does the community respond when a person with a disability knows and acts on their own rights?
I think that the person who knows their own rights, it's more likely to be a better citizen. I think a person who starts to know their own rights is able to interact in the community and start to change this, view that persons with disability cannot do many things. A person with disability that is aware of their own rights start to seen by other members of the community as a productive and an active and a participating person in the community.
So what are the next steps for the project?
We are now planning to keep our work, and we have been doing the project in around 45 countries, and we have trained more than 1,000 people around the globe. But now we are now focusing ourselves in promoting at the international level, in international organizations and international human rights mechanisms, our results and our funding to basically transform this project into a sustainable Global Forum. We are using technology to set up a online platform for training in the field of disability rights, because we expect to have more people starting to know their own rights and starting to empower themselves in terms of promoting their own rights.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Thank you.
My thinking always has been that disability rights promotion is an essential part of ensuring that individuals with disabilities have equal access. It's critical that they know their rights, even in places that are still what we would refer to as the developing world. DRPI works in these areas to make sure that there's a fair chance for these people. It's fine to have great principles on paper, to say to the rest of the world, we're doing this, ain't we great? But in truth, the actions have to match the ideals. If you're going to support individuals with disabilities, you should make sure that they know how to access those supports. It's fine having the right toolkit available, but the more people who are aware of what should be in place for them, the better equipped they'll be to ask for these services, the better equipped they'll be in workplace situations, for example. When someone says, you don't have the right to this, they can say, yes, I do, and here's why. The truth is, information has always been the key in disability life, the only key to breaking down myths and stereotypes. That betters us all as a society. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
During the summer months, extreme heat is a reality and everyone is at risk. Extreme heat can lead to adverse health effects such as heat stroke. Here are some tips to stay cool and out of harm's way while spending time outdoors this season. Drink fluids every 15 to 20 minutes, even if you do not feel thirsty. The body dehydrates quickly. Apply SPF 15 or greater sunscreen 20 minutes before going outdoors. Don't forget to apply sunscreen to ears and nose, which are particularly susceptible to sunburn. Protect your face and head by wearing a wide-brimmed hat. If you feel dizzy, weak, or overheated, go to a cool place. Sit or lie down, drink water, and wash your face with cool water. If you don't feel better soon, seek medical help immediately. For more information on extreme heat and your health, visit emergencymanagementontario.ca.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Jose Vieira from Disability Rights Promotion International's Latin America office. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Alan Messini from DRAFT. Tell me a little bit about DRAFT.
Sure. Disability Rights Advocates for Technology, or DRAFT, we formed in 2004 as an advocate for the adoption of universally designed technology solutions. You know, it's our belief that this is the only sustainable way for people with disabilities to have the really highest quality of life. We continue to believe that those opportunities can be provided. You know, we live in a great age. There's technology everywhere. But unfortunately, sometimes you look at mobility devices, and when you look at the basic wheelchair, that design hasn't changed in over 100 years. So in our case, the first thing we saw was the Segway. Our group was started by folks with mobility disabilities, and, you know, they rehab us till we can stand up. And if you can stand up and walk a little, first time you go somewhere, you're back in the wheelchair. So really, our main focus had started with the Segway. And we continue today advocacy, trying to, you know, particularly in the U.S., we had a problem when we first started using these things. We got thrown out of everywhere. It was our contention that we were protected under the ADA. Of course, it took years and years of fighting in Washington, but eventually we had a rule change, and the Segway here is recognized as a mobility device when used by a person with a disability. Of course, technology is constantly changing. You look out there, you see these exoskeletons. new wheelchairs, new devices. A lot of them will come to market. A lot of them never will. It's very expensive to get new products to market. But our main focus is really on universal design, designs of products that can serve a wide variety, from able-bodied to folks with disabilities.
Are there any challenges in adapting these technologies in your experience?
Well, that's a good question. A lot of it has to do with the person and the disabilities they have. So, and the way of life, where they live, is it accessible to begin with? Because we talk about, using these devices, we always assume that there's going to be ramps and doors that are wide enough, and I think we all know that doesn't always work that way. The biggest problems with adapting these devices were pushback from places of public accommodation, stores, amusement parks, government offices at one time. Cities early on banned them even for use by disabled. So it was always interesting that such a what seemed so benign as a basically a walker that's motorized could have caused such a ruckus, but it did. We've changed. That's changed over time, but this is going to be a process. Every time somebody comes up with something out of the ordinary, gets used by people with disabilities, particularly if it is a product universally designed, something that the rest of the world's already been using, there's always going to be pushback. Why? Hey, it's a good question. I don't know if I'll ever find the answer to that.
So, to look at the converse side of things, in your time with Draft, has there been any success that stood out for you?
Yeah, there's been a lot. I mean, we can start. I could go back and look at what we've done from an advocacy standpoint, and we've done a lot. We've done a lot of symposiums. We've done testimony in front of the Senate and the Congress. But really, our greatest achievement would be our SEGS for Vets program. In 2005, we started. We saw a need. We had a lot of guys and gals coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan with pretty high-level amputations, and these were young people that have a lot of life to live. And our people in our program, these guys work. We have one that's in the Senate, guy teaching at the military academy. But these are people that want to get ahead, go to school. So we started the program, and it's an amazing program. It's all volunteer, and this has been going on as an all-volunteer program since 2005. Hard to do. We have to date given away over 1,400 Segways to disabled military members, and it's great to see them go on with their lives. So look, for me personally, as a person with a disability, anytime I see somebody using a new technology, adapting it to their life, and getting on with their life, that's big. But for us as an organization, if to hang our hat on anything other than the SEGS for Vets program, that is truly our greatest achievement.
So how does the community typically respond to the work of Draft?
Generally, we get a very welcome response. It's rare that we see negative attitudes. That said, it's not uncommon for the general public. I'll be out, and I'm a L4 incomplete paraplegic. I can stand. I can't walk far. So I'll use a Segway. I'll hear the comments behind me. I'm not getting much exercise, kind of lazy. Now, I've got a cane and a big disability placard on it. But, this is all part. Let's face it. People aren't used to seeing folks with mobility disabilities up and standing and moving on a device that they see, kids taking tours on. So, and it was much worse 10 years ago. Now there's an understanding. People get it. They see it, particularly the younger generation. They embrace the technology. They look at that and they'll say, that's cool. I would have never thought of using a Segway that way. And trust me, there's never been a day when I've been in my wheelchair where somebody looked at it and said, that's cool. I really got to get me one of those.
So if you could send any one message about the need to continue adapting technologies, what would it be?
The message would be this: everyone from the general public to government agencies needs to take a close look and have an open mind when we look at the use of items, universally designed items, by folks with disabilities, be it an automobile, a computer, a typewriter. We need to keep an open mind. We tend to put folks with disabilities kind of in an eggshell, and they can and they can't. Well, we don't know until they do. So when we see a guy with no arms driving a car, because, from time to time, we'll see pretty incredible things. That's an adaptation. We've been doing it for 100 years. It's just as the technology advances, it seems that whether it's a mobility device or computer access in the internet, we always seem to be lagging behind on the side of folks with disabilities. Open mind, and government agencies in particular need to realize it's actually more cost effective for people to be using, say, a Segway, which, you know, I could buy for about $5,000, than it is to have the government provide me with a $15,000 wheelchair.
So what are the next steps for Draft?
We are now, we have a few things going on. We have an adaptation of the Segway. It's called the Ally Chair. And it is probably one of the most advanced, universally designed mobility products around. Now, it's not a wheelchair per se. You know, we have people out there running these things, using checking fence lines and fills. It's really a recreational device. But it operates as a Segway does. It's self-balancing. It was developed when we started getting some really high-level amputees back from Iraq and Afghanistan, and I'm talking about kids that are literally blown off at the navel. Really no other good devices for them. Now, the Ally Chair will give a wide amount of people much more range. Better footprint. It's a small machine. It can turn in its own footprint. And we're focusing on that. And obviously, we're focusing on advocacy. We're always watching. As government goes on, you know, you can pass a regulation, but that doesn't necessarily mean it'll be followed. So we continue to do work in Washington and try to keep things moving forward.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
To my mind, adapted technology is the basis of it all. If you think about it, there are the large-scale pieces of technology used for mobility, accessibility, equality. But there are also the more finite, more intricate things needed for a person with a disability's day-to-day needs. Things such as one-handed scissors, nail clippers, personal items, just to make things that much easier for them. The able-bodied community might look at these and say, why can't they just use the regular equivalents? It's very difficult for someone who only has, say, one functional hand to make use of an able-bodied piece of equipment. The adaptations can be remarkably simple in many cases. But it's just a question of people taking a look and saying, this is something we need. We need to recognize this segment of the population should have the right to equal access, should have the right to make use of any system anyone else would. There are groups out there that make adaptations such as this. Recently, I interviewed a group called Able Gamer, a group devoted to making sure that individuals with disabilities could still enjoy things like video games, greatly recreational activity. But some designs just aren't configured in the first place for a person with a disability. Now, these companies should recognize that it's in their own interests to have some sort of adaptability, some sort of modification to be made. As our good friend DJ Dave Squeaky Wheels has said a million times, disability is the largest minority in the world, and it's only in these businesses' best interests to recognize and embrace diversity. Of course, the questions of technology can only be speculated upon at this point. What seems impossible today might not be impossible tomorrow. But that's the thing. Technology intended for individuals with disabilities can, as Alan said during the interview, have a universal design, a universal application. It might be intended primarily for people with disabilities, but on the other hand, there's no reason that if something's more efficient or more effective, that can't make life easier for the able-bodied community as well. Things like the electric door button, primarily intended for individuals with disabilities. And if you don't need it, don't use it, in my opinion. But for someone struggling to carry groceries and look after small children at the same time, I'd say having that button there could be of benefit to them as well, whether they have a disability or not. Truth is, adaptation has always had a benefit for individuals with disabilities. As our understanding grows, as our technology grows, more and more people with disabilities are putting that to use. Look at one of the great examples, talk and type technology. Programs like Dragon, they can be of benefit to people of the able-bodied community who have to type out long data sets or have to take shorthand. But for an individual with a disability who can't physically type in the same way, this can be a means of communication, a means to reach out, a means to express themselves. And that's something we're all entitled to. There are also examples of things such as smartphones being used to help navigate wheelchairs. This can have an enormous advantage for maneuverability. But the fact is, technology is a shared benefit of this world, something that can be used for the good of all of us. It's not a foregone conclusion that a designer will say this universal application can help a person with a disability. Odds are they're thinking to themselves about their bottom line. We can make this more convenient, so it'll appeal to a consumer base. But if it's of universal design, if it's something a person with a disability can use to their benefit, odds are sales will increase, and odds are people will find the best use for it. If there's a way to adapt for a person with a disability, in this day and age, there's a great likelihood of finding it. Because as we go forward, the technology, the global community makes it that much easier for us to learn from each other's ideas. Going back to the first half of the show, in regards to Disability Rights Promotion International, their work would not be possible without some of the advancements available today. They can communicate around the world instantly just to say, hey, you have these rights. Did you know that? And they can quickly reference and look up the law, find out what other places are doing, what ideas they have, what advancements can be made. Truth of the matter is, technology and rights promotion are a shared benefit, but a shared responsibility. We as a society can never rest on our laurels in the sense that we can't just say, we're doing this in our own community, isn't that great? I think we owe it to the rest of the world to explore what others are doing in the disability field, seeing what we can learn from them, and offering to share our knowledge, see what they can learn from us. If you're someone with the story of disability life, write HandyLink 4, HandyLink, the numeral 4, gmail.com. Always love to hear your stories, folks. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal, so get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks, and we'll see you next week.